This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
Rabble.ca.
Hi, I'm Wayne McPhail, and I was one of the people that originally started the Rabble Podcast Network, and I think that you should support the Rabble Podcast Network and Rabble.ca because there's no other place where you're going to get such a diversity of voices speaking truth to power.
The Rabble Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Show your support by going to rabble.ca/donate.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
Richard Spencer is the man who coined the term alt-right, a term that aims to normalize racism and white supremacism. Richard Spencer spoke to media at a white supremacist conference hosted by the National Policy Institute in Washington just over a week ago. He said, "America was, until this past generation, a white country designed for ourselves and our posterity. It is our creation, it is our inheritance, and it belongs to us." A video from the conference captures Spencer shouting to his audience, "Hail Trump, hail our people, hail victory," as some attendees lifted their arms and gave a Nazi salute. Outside the conference, 500 protesters gathered to protest the white supremacist gathering and its agenda. Lacey McCauley was with that demonstration. She is a Washington, D.C.-based media activist and a member of the D.C. Anti-Fascist Coalition. She wrote the commentary, "What Next? White Supremacists in Suits and Ties in Washington," which was published in Common Dreams. And she joins me right now. Hello, Lacey.
Hello. It's wonderful to be here.
It's our pleasure. To start with, what do we know about the kind of activities and behavior that happened inside that conference last week?
Well, I can only say that what happened inside that conference was something that we would all hope had been left in Nazi Germany. But I think that, you know, Richard Spencer, who you just referred to, you know, said a very memorable phrase at the beginning of that conference, which has stuck in my mind, which is, "Let's party like it's 1933. Of course, 1933 being the year that Adolf Hitler was elected into power. And so, you know, many people call this group the alt-right. Many people call them neo-Nazis. I personally have just begun calling them actual Nazis because they actually are, they're literally aiming to recreate some of that Nazi energy. Alt-right, of course, is a term that is attributed to Richard Spencer, the head of the National Policy Institute. It means alternative right, and it really is a term to mask what I think that I think it's just to mask what the organization really is about. And, you know, I think that they would rather be called the alt-right than white supremacists, which really is what they stand for. They believe in that racial identity essentially is the determining factor in terms of what kind of place you should live. They believe that, you know, your racial identity should separate you from other racial identities. They are actually very much calling for a white homeland, and they would like to see essentially just an all-white, very sort of isolated kind of community somewhere. They actually have taken their points from the state of Israel and would like to kind of have a, you know, their own homeland, which needless to say, is exceptionally problematic. Of course, they want to exclude all other people who identify as different races from their white homeland.
In your article in Common Dreams, you said that the organization and its members are fully fascist, fully racist, and not hiding it. Fascism, of course, is a often misunderstood and often abused word. Can you unpack that statement a little bit for us?
In order to kind of set up a white homeland, of course, it's necessary to have that fascist, totalitarian, authoritarian kind of government that can basically control people's lives. I don't think it is something that many people would want to see, to have our government basically try to control our reproductive rights, to try to basically limit our reproductive rights. I stand, and I think that most of us stand, for an actual community where basically all of us have the agency and are allowed to basically decide who we want to raise a family with, who we want to fall in love with. And, of course, it would take a, you know, an exceptionally totalitarian, authoritarian, fascist type of government to control our communities and our families to that level and that degree. And it's absolutely something that they're not hiding. The election of Donald Trump in the United States has given them, I think, basically the kind of credit that they need, the cred that they need to basically think that they can continue to sort of spread their policies of white supremacy, and that they think that they're going to gain currency in the Trump administration. They think that they're going to gain currency and their policies are going to be accepted. I think that that's why it's so important for us here in the United States. It is so important for all of us to basically stand up and say, actually, no, we believe in policies of acceptance, policies of inclusion, and policies of love, and not policies of fear and exclusion from each other.
I know President-elect Trump saying that he's disavowing and condemns the National Policy Institute. What do you say to that?
Well, yes. In fact, I was really happy to see that President Trump, when pressed, you know, in an interview, you know, with the New York Times, that he actually did, quote, disavow the National Policy Institute and the Nazi salutes. But I think that, you know, it's not escaped anyone's attention who's actually paying attention to this, that the National Policy Institute, one of their first sort of like starter policies, kind of like the first step in their sort of march to this fascist world that they would like to see, is of course a ban on immigration. And that is something that President Trump built his following on, sort of the idea that immigrants from, say, Mexico are not welcome, that immigrants from any Muslim country are not welcome, or immigrants who are Muslim are not welcome. And so I think that this is, you know, this is something that these white supremacists have in common with Donald Trump. And they also, of course, have basically both Donald Trump and these white supremacists have basically, you know, built their followings as well on racism. And of course, the National Policy Institute, these white supremacists are much more, you know, overtly racist and overtly white supremacist than Donald Trump may be willing to show. But I think it's not escaped anyone's attention that for people who actually voted for Trump, for people who are followers of Trump, racism at least wasn't a deal breaker. The very kind of racist comments and the dog whistling, the discussions of Mexicans as rapists, the discussions of the inner cities and how so many people are being killed, and that's actually, you know, a problem in the Black American communities. These kind of dog whistling statements weren't deal breakers for people in the U.S. And I think, of course, it reflects that we have so much work to do in the United States to create the harmonious kind of world that we would all like to see. But, you know, it also shows, I think, for people like the NPI, like these white supremacists, for people like this, it shows them that maybe they have more of a following than they realize, and that they feel empowered by the election of Donald J. Trump. And yes, even if Trump says these words that he supposedly disavows them, the proof is in the pudding. He's built his candidacy on, you know, basically exclusion of immigrants, and that actually is the very first proposal that the National Policy Institute, these white supremacists, have put forward. They proposed a a moratorium on immigration of up to 50 years, except, they say, for some European countries. Possibly they would kind of leave some immigration venue open. But basically, they want to have an isolated country, and they want that country to be a white one. And, of course, that's a terrifying prospect.
I'd like to move away now from the conference and all the ugly talk inside, and talk a bit about you and the protesters. What was that like? What was the group of 500 outside?
Well, the group of 500 was a beautifully mixed, beautifully diverse group who, you know, basically were calling for just an end to this kind of hate, these kind of policies based on hate, this kind of ideology based on hate. Some of our chants were things like racists eating creme brulee, you are still the KKK, and we basically chanted, you know, down with fascism, you know, things like this. And it was basically a beautifully mixed group. The organizing body was the DC Anti-Fascist Coalition. I think that, you know, there are just a variety of people who really want to stand for a world in which, no, we don't have people isolated away from each other based upon race, and a world in which we accept each other's differences and we celebrate each other's differences. And we certainly don't accept that that somehow people should be, you know, divided based upon race.
I have to say, I read the article that you wrote earlier this week, and I love the fact you were able to rhyme creme brulee with KKK. I just thought that was brilliant. To end your article, you do a call to action. So what can people concerned, like us in Canada and down in the United States, what can we do to fight this white supremacism?
I believe that the most important thing to do is anything that you can do to support actually just policies of inclusion, policies that look like support for immigrants, policies that basically look like, you know, celebrating and empowering people from historically marginalized communities in the U.S. That would be Black American communities, and, you know, Indigenous American communities in Canada. It would also be, you know, Black and Indigenous Canadian communities. And I think that anything that you can do to support those communities, first of all, is very worthwhile. Secondly, of course, joining an anti-fascist group in your community and basically standing up against, you know, against fascism is so important. And right now, to support groups in the United States, of course, donating to, you know, groups that are supporting immigrants, donating to groups that are supporting actual people in the Black American communities who are trying to empower themselves. I guess I'm speaking especially of Black Lives Matter related movements. These are exceptionally valuable, and also just to uphold actually celebration of diversity and celebration of each other's differences. One of the things that I should mention is that, of course, these groups actually have kind of a pseudoscience. They have kind of like a debunked sort of scientific basis, which states that they kind of look at, you know, geneticists. Most of those geneticists have been debunked, and they base their kind of thinking heavily on IQ tests. And anyway, so this kind of science actually is completely false and has already been debunked. And of course, it's anything that you can do to basically just kind of look at the science yourself and realize how false it is would be also a really good start. And to understand that, you know, we all should be living in a world where we embrace each other's differences. It is actually our diversity and differences that's what makes communities strong. And so in your own community, if you want to, you know, act to embrace diversity and embrace difference, that is strengthening your community, and it's also taking a step against fascism.
That's a beautiful thought. I want to thank you very much, Lacey, for speaking with me today.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
I've been speaking with Lacey McCauley, a Washington, D.C.-based media activist and a member of the D.C. Anti-Fascist Coalition. She wrote the commentary, What Next? White Supremacists in Suits and Ties in Washington, which is published on the Common Dreams website.